Live from the In the Room studios located in the NetCarrier and Cloud, this is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
It's WCW World Championship Wrestling! Would you look at this capacity crowd on hand? We are in the city that never sleeps, the entertainment capital of the world, a fitting place for a remarkable night. WCW World Championship Wrestling!
Hey, it's a brand new Monday Nitro as World Championship Wrestling gets ready for the millennium! Welcome to the studio number 3! Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to WCW Monday Nitro! And we're live from Las Vegas! At the MGM Grand Garden Arena, a brand new look, a brand new day, and great wrestling action.
So, welcome. We're back. After two long weeks, we are back. I am the host of WCW Retro, Dan the Man, well, Dan the Above Average Comedian, the Man, whatever they say, call it Chico. Find me on Twitter at DanLaw83, and with me as always is the new Carolinas champion of the world, of the universe, Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling. How you doing?
Great to be here.
So it's been two long weeks, and we're still on the high from we're talking about one of the top-rated programs ever in cable history, and again, a game changer in the world of professional wrestling, and that is WCW Monday Nitro. Now, at the beginning of the show, I played the intro of the show where they debuted a new set. Now, this was before I was on the internet very much. This was April 99, April 6th, I believe. A lot of changes happened in the month of April in WCW. We'll get into that a little later. But this was the night that all of a sudden, a new logo, a new set, new ring, everything, debuted on Nitro. Now, at the time, and you would know something about this, Joe, at the time, the ratings weren't terrible, but they weren't doing very well. I asked you first, when you change a logo, when you change set and you do a little facelift, do you think at that point it's enough to light a fire under everyone's butt and it freshens everybody up, or was it business as usual?
Well, it was to that point where they were just trying new things. I mean, you had bookers flying in and out of the office like crazy, one or after the other, and you had and the talent there, you know, still great talent, some, you know, best in the world. You know, it was just, at the time, there was just the direction. There wasn't any direction. I mean, it was just like throwing things against the wall and see what would stick.
Yeah, I remember the week before was the return of Sting. It was in Toronto, Canada, the Air Canada Center. It's things like that. Things like that. I don't know why I remember things like that, but yeah. But, And Hogan and DDP destroyed the set, and I correct myself. That was April 5th, 1999, when they changed the set and they debuted. Apparently, it was enough to get the ratings back up a full point, because the week before they were at 3.5, and then they go to Vegas. It's the week before the Spring Stampede 99 pay-per-view. And here's what I find interesting. I'll get your thoughts on this, too. It's on Nitro that Sting comes back. They announce the week before, the Monday before the pay-per-view, they announce that the main event for Spring Stampede is going to be a four-way dance for the title, Hulk Hogan, DDP, Ric Flair, and the returning Sting with the Macho Man as the referee. How that has ever flown at last minute, we talked last time, if you remember, about the how great, but how much of a debacle the Goldberg world title match free on Nitro was, but how much of a debacle when you're getting your rear end kicked by Raw to just wait last minute like that. There are so many things that were going wrong to just wait and announce the pay-per-view like that.
You know, it's always a tough sell when you have no build-up. You just throw a match that can be built to be a huge money-making main event. I mean, spur of a moment right there on the Nitro. Instead of what it should have been on the pay-per-view, right? So, yeah, I mean, especially you have a four-way match for the title with four of the biggest stars of the company. You know what I mean?
Oh, man. I remember this, and we're going to break this down kind of in – we talk about the new direction and Bischoff getting fired, and then at the second half of the show – Derek will be joining us eventually, he said. We're talking about a little in-depth more about the Bischoff-Russo era that was. And I just remember that the in-ring, I still felt at that point, and, you know, get an inside view of it, that the in-ring product was still miles away. That's unfair, because you had guys on WWF like Austin and Rock and all these, Owen Hart was still, you know, doing the Blue Blazer gimmick and tagging with Jarrett. You had Jarrett up there. You had Triple H was starting to become the world champion. So you had great workers there. I felt at that time that WCW had still a better in-ring product. It slowly turned around after that. But how do you feel about that aspect of it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it arguably the creme de la creme. I mean, not just the U.S. and from like all over the world. I mean, the talent base was amazing.
And it was around this time, and again, that's something I touched upon last week. It was around this time. And please call in at what's the number, Stro? Just true.
855 VOC Nation. Excuse me, VOC Radio. Sorry, 855 VOC Radio.
Yeah, there it is. I completely blanked, and I wrote it down, and I was like, oh, God, 855 VOC Radio, VOCNation.com. Wow. Sorry, guys. They finally gave one of my favorite wrestlers, DDP, the title, and I mentioned this on HIC Talk Radio on last night. We were mentioning title runs in WCW, and I feel, especially at his age, that DDP, I think it was the right time for him, and I really feel that he should have gotten a longer chance to keep the title. I think that makes sense to you. He was given the title at that four-way match we talked about at Spring Stampede and ran with it. Like I said, one of the greatest matches, because we're on a tangent about Sting and DDP and veteran workers at WCW at the time. They had a, 20-minute match on Nitro later on for the title, which was a weird night because he won the title, Sting. By the end of the night, it was back on DDP because they had another four-way dance on the main event of Nitro that night.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it was Dallas's time to be the man, you know, in the company, and as happy as I was to see him have a run with it, I was hoping he would have more of an established, longer reign as champion. So, but I mean, the main event situation was just crazy. It really was.
I mean, it was weird. You had Paige on top, and then all of a sudden, and I mentioned it on the last show again, I loved the Jersey Triad, the Bam Bam and Canyon and DDP. But he went from a year being on top of the tippy top of the mountain, and he was tag team champion again. And I don't know what, you could look back and analyze a bunch of things, but I really don't understand why you didn't keep it on him. It's not like not keeping it on him helped or hurt the ratings any.
Right. It's just like, you know, as the cycles, you know, the rest of his life going cycles. And when it's someone's time, you know, I mean, It to backtrack, you know, I mean, if you will, to it's just it just defeats the purpose. I mean, it was his time to be champion, and And I mean, I feel he should have had a even more established reign than what he did. I mean, my view.
I believe we have a caller, so I'm going to try to go to this caller. Caller, you're on the air with WCW Retro. How you doing?
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air, sir.
Yes, I have a question for the Stro. This is going to go back to some of his indie days, if he doesn't mind. There was an indie worker that he used to work a lot, and I'd like to see if he knew and what he thought about Reno.
Reno Wiggins?
No, from ECBH.
Reno, oh, okay, all right. Oh, man,
that's been a while. Stroke should know who he is.
Reno, oh, yeah, Reno. Yeah, okay, he was part of the tag team with Chuck King, is that it?
That's it, James Reno and Chuck King.
Yeah, that's it, yeah, very well, very well. Is this him by chance?
Yes, brother, it's him, brother.
Hey, brother, how you doing?
Good, man. How you been?
Great to hear from you. How are things going?
Things are going great. I see you're doing well from what I see from your post and all, and I thought I'd give you a call and say hello to you.
Man, so good to hear from you, man. Really, really good, man. Just, you know, keeping together, you know. God's been great. No?
You've got that right. I just wanted to throw a blast from the past at you there, brother.
Hey, yeah, thank you so much. Really appreciate it, man.
All right, brother, I'll get off here, and I'll drop you an email later on. We'll catch up on some stuff.
Hey, thank you so much. God bless you, brother.
You too, brother.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Hey,
you never know who's going to call in on WCW Retro, right?
I'm not going to cut him off whatsoever, yeah. Let him go.
Goodness gracious. Wow.
That's great.
Yeah, that is
great. I had a feeling as he was kind of leading in, like, this is probably him. I hope you remember who this is.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I first thought it was Rena Riggins from Smoky Mountain Wrestling. I did some stuff with him a while back.
And it's funny. That's going to help me cut off on another thing, another name that just popped in my head. Reno and WCW. Do you know a little bit about that guy and whatever happened to Reno and WCW?
Oh, yeah, the big guy, Reno, right?
Yeah, he was
Yeah, you know, I always thought he was pretty impressive. You know what I mean? Big, strong guy. You know, I don't know what would ever happen to the guy, to be honest with you.
I know he had a dark match. I'm pretty sure it was during Raw, where he wrestled another guy from WCW, because he was in the Alliance at the time. You know, I'm pretty sure it was somebody from, the Natural Born Thrillers. It's one of those guys. You know, it was either Mark Jindrak or Mike Sanders. Another guy I miss. Mike Sanders, I'll get into him in a little while. I liked him on the mic. He was great, a little cocky bastard. But he wrestled a dark match, and I know he was sent down to Heartland. And I'm pretty sure that was it. Remember World Wrestling All-Stars, the Australian company?
Right, yeah, I heard those guys.
Yeah, he was there for a little while until that promotion shut down, and then I never saw him again. That was another guy they pushed, you know, he was getting pushed in 2000, and towards the end, he's a big guy and a big, tough guy, and he actually
Speaking of that company, I believe that's the company they called me in to. I think they want to. They were trying to bring in Barbarian and myself for that tour, right? And at the time, I was technically with WCW. You know, I had to wait to like the 90-day thing, the no compete clause and everything, and you know, I couldn't be involved with that tour. I remember those guys were calling me. See if I would, you know, be a part of that.
I tell you what, and it'd be funny. I ordered every single one of those pay-per-views except for the very last one, because the one before that was so god awful. I was like, never mind. But I remember ordering those because I knew the WCW guys were going to land there. You know, Sting was there, Sid Vicious after he broke his leg, Hart was there, all those guys were there. Unfortunately, Jeremy Borash was. I've never seen this before, unless it was on an independent. I've never seen this before. they had the play-by-play guy also doing the ring announcing.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And that was Jerry Borash. Jerry Borash was given that unfortunate task, and he ran with it. Jerry Borash is a good guy and a good commentator, but he was given that unfortunate task.
I gave Jeremy Borash a Chris Jericho-looking shirt, kind of like the one he debuted for WWE Raw on his WWE debut. for his birthday, and he wore that thing like crazy. He thought he was like a kid at Christmas time. He was the old Jericho thing with his shirt on. It was great.
You know, he was in late 2000 or mid 2000. He was Vince Russo's little lackey, and it used to crack me up. He was hilarious. DDP, back to the whole DDP, there was a lot of guys, this is where you started to see, because not only that, beginning in 99, all those guys they brought in with the NWO were out. Hulk Hogan was out. Scott Hall obviously had his issues.
Right.
They brought in Bandit. They were pushing Goldberg still. But this is where you started to see some new guys coming in to get chances. Ernest Miller was getting a big push at this point. You were brought in. They were bringing in guys from CW. They brought in the Sandman. I refuse to call him Hack because that's stupid. I mean, they were even pushing Van Hammer again in 99. Remember his second mid-card push?
Oh, yeah. That was when he was like with the Flock, right? Raven's Flock.
Yeah, he kind of transitioned outside of the Flock and just became kind of like this pothead kind of gimmick. This guy was he wasn't high, but that was the indication that, you know, he was kind of not with us. There's another guy, Lash LaRue, from the Raging Cajun, as they called him. He was really good. I remember Lash LaRue. But they finally started transitioning in these guys to take over these spots. For these big guys. So you finally started seeing new guys getting switched in every which way and changing the landscape of Nitro forever at that point.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think that was right after the what we know now as the Radicals debuted in WWE. You know what I mean? Right after the Benoit situation with Sullivan when he won the strap, won the title. And it was like it was Benoit, Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero, Perry Saturn, and Shane Douglas all left at the same time, so left a void for to get the forefront and the push.
I'm going to use this opportunity to ask you a question, sir. Was Benoit already on the way out when they gave him the strap at Sold Out?
Well, with the Benoit situation, you know, he was, you know, the office was kind of divided, I think, because there was some in the office that wanted to felt it was Benoit's time to be champion. And there was, but at the same time, there was like, there were a lot of like differences going on at the time. And to the point where, I think at the time, Chris didn't feel like he would have had a chance because he was afraid the carpet would be drugged out from under him, more or less. I mean, there was a lot of dissension there at the time. And you had great talents like Malenko and Perry, Shane Douglas, Eddie, that bust their butt every night. And, you know, just they all got to the point where they just had enough. So they all left together, and next thing you know, they're on WWE Raw, which left a void for a lot of us, you know, to have our day in the sun, more or less, you know, with WCW. So it is what it is.
Another gentleman that was getting a push on Nitro, and I'm not going to say this disrespectfully because he's the son of one of the greatest, if not the greatest, champion in wrestling history. But another guy that was getting primary spot on Nitro was David Flair. What was it like being a guy back there, kind of getting a half-assed push, and watching David Flair getting, I don't know, not co-main events, but getting matches before main events in prime time on TV?
Well, you know, one of my first feuds as Maestro was with David Flair, right?
Yeah, I remember.
And you know, I mean, you know, David himself outside the ring was a very, he still is a very, very nice guy. And you can ask for a nicer guy. You know, it's just, I don't feel, you know, and he really tried really hard, but I felt like he had a heart, his heart and passions in life were elsewhere. Whereas his dad was, you know, he lived, breathed wrestling. You know what I mean? And, and which was a shame because his brother Reed, you know, I mean, he had a lot of his dad's fire in him. You know what I mean? And it's a shame, you know, what happened to Reed because, I mean, he had all the potential to really, you know, take that wrestling career and just roll and just run with it. You know, I mean, he had his dad's fire and David, you know, nice guy. And he gave it a great effort. You know, it's just, I just felt like his heart was with other things at the time.
It's a completely different situation. I feel from, another, I guess we'd call him legend in this business, Bill Watts' son, Eric, who wanted to be a wrestler and was pushed down everybody's throats, and it never panned out for anybody.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, people just don't realize, I mean, when you got your dad or even your mother or any, or your elders that were like legends and stars in the business, I mean, those are big, huge shoes to fill, you know, I mean, like I really feel for guys like the Randy Ortons and the Barry Windhams, and the guy and the Curt Hennings that had to work and crawl and scratch to get everything they could out of this business because it's really tough to be coming, you know, from being second or third generation coming from, you know, a legendary status figure in the business.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I can't imagine what that feels like. You had to. I've had a minor version of that situation. It had nothing to do with wrestling, and it wasn't nearly as pushy, but you had a lot of pressure when you have three family members doing a certain business that you try, and you just find that after a few years you don't want to be there. Unfortunately, I didn't have the blowback from my father, but I kind of know that. Not at the level they've ever seen it. But I kind of know what they feel. the first time, being outside of the business and being a fan like I was, I'll present it to you like this. The first time, and I knew the quote-unquote, the word kayfabe. I knew what it meant. I knew there was real. I knew there was a work shoot, you know, all those terms that, you know, you can use in the business. But again, this was before I was really on the internet a lot, you know, dial-up connection, and I was, you know, wasn't allowed to be on it for more than an hour a day. And the first I knew or I noticed there was a problem as far as ratings and or attendance was when Nitro went to the Astrodome that year. And they had been to the Astrodome before. And obviously, you're not going to sell out a Monday night at an Astrodome. Not something that big. But this following, they were there in 97. They went back in 99. And when they went back in 99, the attendance was terrible. And that was the first time, I believe, I noticed, wow, where is everybody? What's happening? That's the first time it kind of struck me, oh, this is not going well. What's going on? I don't know. That was actually the first time I decided maybe to jump on the internet and look at the dirt sheets and start grabbing all the magazines. And I was reading, you know, PWI and everything, but I was grabbing every magazine you could, trying to read what the heck was going on backstage. By the time you joined, but let me rephrase that. By the time you're on TV, you were feeling the effects of the Astrodome and the dwindling audiences. What was it like backstage as a wrestler going to an arena like that and not seeing it full anymore? Did you even worry about it? Or is it something that you don't even pay attention to at the time?
Well, it didn't really hit me too awful bad until after I left the company. Because, like, I mean, it was kind of starting, you know, right before I left the company after my 3-year deal. But, like, when it really hit me was, like, maybe a month or so later after my run, you know, after I left. And I went to see the Nitros and the Thunders being taped on the same night. Lance Storm working his butt off, you know what I mean? Because that was when he was doing all the Canadian click, right?
Yeah.
And it was just crazy. And, I mean, you could see the look on Ric Flair's face there. And, I mean, he was, like, really miserable at the time. And it was just crazy. And it really hit me right now that things were really going down south. Because I was, you know, hearing rumors from other people. And then when you actually see what's happening for yourself, it's like, oh, wow, you know.
Can you imagine guys like that, not even Hogan, but like Sting and Flair and even, you know, Regal and Finley, guys that have been there for a little while, looking at what's happening and how miserable they must be watching this just fall flat on its face.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's look at those faces. It was just, you couldn't get over it. And going back to Flair, I mean, a guy that's, like, been there for so long, the founding members of the company, you know what I mean? You know, when he's not happy, you know something's up, you know? Because, I mean, guys like him knew more about the company than the office. You know what I mean? So,
do you think firing Bischoff, do you think that would have made a difference? Or do you think maybe they, should have kept him along to to try to pull them out of this funk, or do you think it was inevitable that he was going to go?
Well, I don't think Enos should have never left to begin with, you know, because, I mean, at least with Bischoff, he had a vision. He knew what he wanted to do with the company, right? And that part about it, I pretty much respect him for. And, you know, when he left the first time, I thought it was a mistake. And, you know, because, I mean, he was having issues with the production and everything like that, and I really wish those things could have got resolved or he would have stayed, because if they would have stayed and Eric was, you know, kept at the helm, you know, with Ted Turner, you know, we'd still be in business.
Do you think, were you on TV while Nash was still booking?
Yes.
Two-part question.
Yes, I was.
Two-part question.
Okay.
Listen, a lot of people crap on Nash. I still love the guy. He's smart. He couldn't, you know, people say he can't work worth a damn. He knows he couldn't work worth a damn. He only had 5-6 moves, as Cornette would say. But he was smart. He was a world champion. I think him as a booker at that company probably didn't work out so well. It didn't work out so well. It probably wasn't a good idea. Do you think Kevin Nash as Booker hurt the company more than helped? Number one. And number two, what was it like working at a TV taping or a TV show with Nash as Booker? Was it any more or less organized?
It was different. I think that position kind of was that fell in his lap, basically. And, you know, it's like, okay, you know. but it was just kind of crazy at the time, because at that point, you know, I felt like we had a new booker every few weeks, you know. And there was one, who was it? Bill Bush. Oh, yeah, Bill Bush. He didn't know you knew who the heck I was. And I'd been there for at least a few years or more, right? And, you know, and at least everybody who took that position, they knew who the talent were, you know what I mean? Which was kind of part of the job curriculum, kind of know your talent and what you had to work with. So, you know, it was just, it was nuts.
Oh, man, I can only imagine. And you have to remember, like, these shows that they were booking to go to, like the Georgia Dome in 99, the Superdome, the MCI, they were booking those while the ratings and the crowds were hot. So by the time they were coming around to these towns and the ratings started to dip, it was like, uh-oh, this looks great on TV.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's like, it was really hard at the time to get something established and get moving forward. And for any for lengthy storyline or program, you know, when you had all these things going on creatively and, you know, all these new bookers coming and going and want to do things differently than the one before. And, you know, it was hard to get something concrete where it will, like, last. So it was just like, you know, we as talent had to make omelets out of a few eggs and do the best what was given to us.
I have one last question for commercial break. And I, again, I'm not trying to get you in trouble. Not that it matters at WCW anymore, but it's an actual...
Oh, that's fine. Go ahead.
It's kind of like a legit, like kind of like from the fan side question. This is a wrestling nerd question. Do you think they should have used this opportunity to scrap Sting, Goldberg, Hogan, all those guys, and completely do a reboot with the younger guys, or do they not have an option?
This business always gone in cycles, and there's some great wrestlers of yesteryear, you know, like the Luthezes and the Harley Races and the Funks, the Briscoes. I mean, they, as great of wrestlers they were, they always gave back to the new generation. They keep the cycle rolling. And I feel that, you know, even WCW, those guys you just mentioned should have done what their predecessors before did for them. And that's passed the torch to the younger guys that keep the machine rolling and keep the ball rolling with the business. I mean, that's just the way it is in pro wrestling. That's how we survive.
Yeah, I just remember when I was, you know, a kid watching this all unfold, that there was all these rotating new faces coming in on Raw, but WCW stuck with the guy. Now, I loved the guys on WCW, but I noticed there was less of a curtain change, a change of pace and a change of cast on Nitro than there was at one point. You know, the other shoe's got to drop, obviously. I'm going to go to commercial. We're going to come back and talk about Russo-Bischoff era. We're going to talk about a little bit about the Russo era and then the Russo-Bischoff return, obviously, into the fall of WCW. So I guess we'll take a commercial break. We'll be right back after this.
Live from the In the Room studios located in the Net Carrier and Cloud, this is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Hey, everyone, it is your favorite knockout, Mickey James, and you're listening to the VOC Nation.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Thanks for coming on down. It's Save Wrestling, the podcast, and the business making town. I am your award-winning hostess with the mostest, Shelly Funtime Martinez, and she is my co-host, Dazzling Danielle.
Woo! Hello out there.
And together we are the Martinez Girls. You finally did it. And you can join us here Monday, new time, 6 p.m. Eastern on the VOC Nation as we save wrestling together, Danielle. Fighting crime. Woo!
Hey, guys. Brady Hicks here, Pro Wrestling Illustrated contributing writer and the host of In the Room, thebradyhicks.com, and for the first time ever, vocnation.com. So happy to be part of the family. Join us each and every Tuesday night, 9, 8 Central, vocnation.com, thebradyhicks.com, myself, DJ, Derek McDonald, Ray Bogus, Anthony Sarlo, Kathy Fitz, breaking down all that's going on in wrestling today. And so much more.
Hey, it's me, the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. Netcarrier has many great products and services to increase your bottom line. Be sure to ask your Netcarrier representative about our hosted PBX. Call Netcarrier today for a free analysis of your phone bills. 877-255-7733. That's right, 877-255-7733. Call now.
It's not easy being in IT today. Data is growing exponentially, technology is changing at an accelerating pace, and the consequences of unplanned downtime are more serious than ever. StorageHype helps eliminate these risks by automating all the data protection and disaster recovery for your laptops, servers, and virtual systems through a single provider. StorageHype can help you free up more time, recover faster, and improve the reliability of your backup process. Visit StorageHype.com.
The most polarizing personalities worldwide. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Looking for a DJ? Looking for someone to host your event? Then look no further. Philadelphia's hottest DJ and host, The Voice of Choice. The Voice of Choice has hosted the hottest events in the tri-state area. Book The Voice of Choice for all your karaoke, conventions, and parties. Go to www.vocnation.com for more information or email The Voice of Choice at voc@vocnation.com.
Are you getting lost in the cloud? Is technology moving too fast for you? Find your way at netcarrier.com. Ride the NCloud and soar above your competition.
This is Buggy Nova, your Candyland princess, and I want everyone to know that I love VOCNation.com.
Hey, how's it going? This is Amy Dumas, but you may know me as Lita. You're listening to the VOC Nation.
Actually, your last night on Nitro, which wasn't much. It was you standing at ringside. They didn't use you. Dumb. But that's okay. That was from the Pepsi Center, April 10th, the year 2000. That was the night Bischoff and Russo came back on TV. And this was also not only on TV, but backstage, that they were going to run the show. I noticed that didn't last very long, Stro. Those two working together. I think at that point that the on-camera role, you could not compete with Mr. McMahon character, and I think that was part of it. But at that point, I think it was already too far in the hole for even Bischoff and Russo to pull it out of, and I'll get your thoughts on that, and then I'll go to my first point.
Oh yeah. That's... I remember that night all too well. we were told that night that things were going to change and turn things around for the better and all this and everything's going to work out for the better for everybody, right? And I emphasize the word everybody. Well, okay, so we get out to the ring, we're all in the ring there and at ringside. And, you mentioned before you saw myself, I'm standing there with everybody else. And, when the pyro comes down, it almost catches Stacy Keebler's hair on fire, bless her heart. and then, we see these seven guys come out, like Kidman and Booker T, right? They get their own entranceway to the ring, right? And okay, and we're all looking at each other like, okay. And then we see Bischoff and Russo having this big hug fest and all this and, kissing up to each other and, singing Kumbaya and all that stuff. And then, it's going to turn things around for everybody, right? And we're thinking, okay, then why are we all here, Why certain people getting, like, their own intro and, and then next thing you know, we have, all the established top guys come out, the Sid Vicious and Sting and Lex Luger and Diamond Dallas Page and all that. And, we're starting a new clean new slate. All the champions, will be stripped of the titles, including you, Sid Vicious. And he said was the heavyweight champ, right? And, Sid was like, did the promo, was like, you want it, you can come take it. And little Bischoff walks up the aisle and just takes the belt from Big Sid Vicious, right? Which blew my mind. You know what I mean?
Why?
You know what I mean? The big question, why are you doing this?
Well, did they tell you ahead of time what they were doing, or was it kind of, was that on the fly? Was that a shoot, or was that a work?
Well, I'm sure some people, you know, knew about it, and some people didn't. But, you know, a lot of us, we were told that night was like, you know, things are going to change for everybody. It's going to be good for everybody. We're going to turn things around for the whole company, right? And I didn't, you know, I don't know about anybody else, but I'm sure quite a few people was taking Ralph's ticket. You know, I wasn't seeing it. It was the same old stuff we've been dealing with, you know what I mean? And and the whole, a lot of that whole program, you know, a lot of us were like really out of the loop, you know. I'm looking at Finley.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was just crazy. But I just think it was wrong to just take the strap off your heavyweight champion like that for no apparent reason. Just for political. I mean, and it just had a really bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah. I just to put things in perspective, this is what the revamping, the week before Nitro did a 1.8, right? Raw did a 6.4. This week of the new Nitro, Raw did a 6.1, excuse me, I can't talk tonight. Raw did a 6.15 and Nitro only did a 3.1. And the next week's rating, Raw's climbed and Nitro's dropped. So I you know what? Listen, for not for nothing, but I still watched every single week. I don't know. I don't know what that if it helps you. That makes you feel better. I was watching every week, damn it. to rewind it a little bit, they brought in Ferrara and Ed Ferrara and Vince Russo in October of 99. I was at the Nitro. The last Nitro in Philadelphia was the first Nitro that Ferrara and Russo took over. And we talked about that before. But I wanted to bring up the point about Crash TV. Did anybody really think, this is a rhetorical question, but obviously I want your response. Did anybody really think Crash TV, what Russo called it, was ever going to work in Nitro with all those established stars?
Well, we all try to stay positive, you know, that things were really going to, you know, turn out for the better. But I think a lot of the veterans in the company kind of knew the deal ahead of time, just because, you know, they knew what worked the WCW area and the era and the fan base and everything. I mean, we were based around like old school wrestling, you know, back from the NWA days. I mean, that's how we got to be where we were, you know what I mean? And to deviate from that and try to be something we're not and something that the fans would tune in to watch WWE Raw, or, you know what I mean? And where, you know, WWE product, I mean, who better to do WWE product than the WWE? You know, that's their baby. I mean, they're all about sports entertainment. You know, we were all about the wrestling, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they knew... You know, they knew that's the formula we should have stuck with. You know, even when things were getting popular with the Nitros and the Thunders and bringing this great talent and that quote unquote wrestling talent, right? Mind you, from all over the world, Japan, Mexico, Europe, it was wrestling based even from there. So, you know, we should just stuck with that and focused on the great talent that we had, because we had some awesome talent, amazing.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just remember that from the week before Medusa, who I still watch weekly on Monster Trucks. Yes, I'm also a Monster Truck fan. That's another podcast for another time. But Medusa went from wrestling one week to the show in Philly. She went to an evening gown match, and soon after that, getting barbecue sauce dropped down her front. As a young man, that was a good idea. Looking back, obviously, you know, I'm talking on the outside. Like I was mentioning about The Miz this week and his position at Raw, but they're all getting paid, so I don't think they care that much. But the TV aspect of it, you went from wrestling and being the top one of the top female wrestlers of the very few in Nitro at the time to being degraded by Ed Ferrara on television. I will tell you this, that was even the stuff at the end when it was the least popular, I liked better than the Crash TV, quote-unquote, era of Nitro. I didn't enjoy the show as much when it was just Ed Ferrara and Russo. I don't think Russo, it's been said 100 times, and it's been said the best way, and I think Ric Flair was quoted on one of the DVDs, Russo without McMahon is just another writer.
Right, right, because Russo would present the ideas, but see the reason why a lot of WWE's, you know, ideas pretty much worked at the time because it was an idea was taken and everybody had a little bit of input into it, but Vince McMahon was the yes or no guy who would say yay or nay to any idea. And when the idea he said would work, said yes to, 9 times out of 10, the idea was a success because everybody had not just one writer, right? But everybody had an input into that idea. And with Russo, I mean, he didn't have a Vince McMahon there in WCW to kind of critique him on his ideas and stuff. So, you know, he had a lot of the ideas come in, you know, that he tried that just did not work, you know.
Yeah.
I remember having Ric Flair doing a figure four in somebody, right? And they're trying to reenact the Brood thing in WWE. You would call it Gangrel, Edge, and Christian, right? Where the blood would come down, right? And he had a figure four in somebody, and like this red goo would just like drop on him, right? And he had the figure four, and Rick had this look like, what the heck is this? That was hysterical.
They did that thing too. It was the Vampiro thing, and they did it to Sting one night too, where they did the Brood. All of a sudden, the lights go out, and Vampiro's covered Sting with blood.
Who could forget the Statue of Liberty, the plastics, the Statue of Liberty that Vince Russo tried to hit Ric Flair with, and it like broke before he even hit him in the head.
Yeah, it started to break apart before you even contact.
It's like plaster, right?
It was like an Enemans chocolate chip cookie just broke in his hand before it ever got to his mouth. It just, you know what? Let's talk about the other dark, quote-unquote, story of WCW. I don't remember mentioning this on the show before, but the hell, let's go for it. David Arquette is the world champion. Go.
Oh, my goodness. You know, David Arquette was a very nice guy. And matter of fact, he donated a lot of his money that he earned from WCW to charity, right? Because he didn't need the money, right? I mean, he was pretty much set.
Oh, God, no. Yeah.
He's in Hollywood doing his thing. You know, it's just as a principle to give your highest championship in your company and to have, you know, the guys, the legends, the people that we looked up to in the business, you know, not just wrestlers, but wrestling fans, you know, from years back that have held this championship and to give it to somebody that's not even a wrestler and, you know, and expect to make money off of it. It's just, you never disgrace your top prize. Never. Because that's just like a suicidal thing to do in business. And at the time, you know, I could see what they're doing. They were thinking at the time, you know, with David Arquette and his popularity, you know, it would give him, you know, big news and, the media would run wild with it and everything. I could see where they're coming point at that point. But at the same token, I really thought, in my opinion, they should have second-guessed that idea.
Jeez. Yeah, I just the way that whole angle, you know, we can't touch upon it because it wasn't really a Nitro thing, but I'll touch upon it because since we mentioned the beginning of it, the whole thing ended up being an angle just to give Jeff Jarrett another title reign.
Yeah, I mean, why do that when Jeff Jarrett could actually just, like, win the title from another wrestler? You know what I mean? I mean, what was the a lot of political stuff going on there at the time, you know?
Wasn't there also, I'm trying to find this online, and I don't necessarily trust Wikipedia, but it was something I remembered Didn't Jushin Thunder Liger lose the IWGP Junior title and then win it back on a Nitro, and New Japan Pro Wrestling pretty much ignored that whole thing?
You know, I had heard something along those lines. I didn't get too much detail on it. I mean, all I know is that he came to WCW to do a few matches with Benoit, I do recall. And,
yeah.
Which it was really an honor to have him in the locker room and to see him, you know, actually live doing his thing here in the States, you know what I mean? And Benoit was one to push him big, you know what I mean? Because, you know, they're like old buddies from Japan, and they had stellar matches, but, you know, the office didn't want to go that route, unfortunately, so.
You know what? Hoovy hit him in the head with a tequila bottle, I think. I'm pretty sure that was that night. That's how he won it. And I think later on they acknowledged the title change, but for, I think, damn near around 10 years, they kind of just dismissed that, as they should have.
That was also along the time that they put Dr. Death Steve Williams in a, I think it was a cage match with Jerry Only, the Misfits.
Oh
my
God.
Unbelievable.
Jesus. Why? You know what? The only thing that Kate did from Jerry Only was one of my favorite, well, she's still my favorite female wrestlers, Daphne, biting him on the nose.
Yeah, Daphne. Oh, man. Yeah, she was great. You know, they were going to do something with Crowbar, her and I, right before I left, putting us together, kind of like a crazy click, if you will. I was so looking forward to that, you know what I mean? Because, I mean, I was a big fan of her work and also Crowbar's as well.
Yeah, Crowbar was one of my favorites, and instead we got David Flair in your spot. Thanks a lot, Stro. I blame you for that. That's your fault.
I'm sorry.
A lot of the things that they did on the TV, and Derek's going to join us a little late, so we'll go a little over, not too much. I think one of the issues with Russo, I'm not a writer. I feel bad saying that. I'm not trying to criticize him, but I am criticizing him because, damn it, my favorite company's not around anymore. There was too many quote-unquote shoots on Nitro. You had the shoot with Goldberg and Nash. You had the shoot with Nash bringing back the third iteration or the 100th iteration of the NWO. You had the shoot with Bret Hart. You had all these quote-unquote shoots that there was no line on TV anymore. You couldn't – there was nothing to write about being real or not because everybody who was watching Nitro, including me, would just dismiss it at that point like, well, it's not real, obviously.
I got to tell you this. Remember the night Scott Steiner pretty much shot on the whole company on the on Nitro there? You know, he came out to the ring dressed like the artist, Prince Ikea, had the whole outfit on,
yeah.
Right? The pimp outfit. Yes. And he's like,
yeah.
You know, and then he was like ripping on Ric Flair and all this. He's like, you know, when I see you old guys like this on TV, you old bastards, you know, I take my remote, turn the channel, and to watch Steve Austin and all the other guys, y'all got fired from this company. Because everybody,
yeah.
My grandma knows WCW sucks. And he says he started plugging the NWO. And I remember watching it with Kevin Sullivan later on the replay. And I remember Sullivan just shaking his head going, oh, my God. I remember after he did that promo, right? I remember like Booker T and we like snuck around to find out what was going to happen. You know, like we were like going, oh, my, you know, cause, you know, we're expecting something. Crazy to happen, right? And here's Bill Goldberg, right? He comes in late, you know, to the building. I think he had flight trouble, right? Getting there. And he's like walking by and Scott, right? And we're thinking, oh no, these guys are going to, you know, because we thought Scott had snapped, you know what I mean? Like he lost it, right? And Scott looks at Bill and said, oh, hey, buddy, how you doing? Walks off with him. In fact, so Scott pretty much worked everybody. You know, it was great.
Scott Steiner would be one of those guys I'd be afraid to ever meet because I'd afraid if I said hello, he was going to hit me.
Yeah, you know, he took me out to dinner one night after I pulled the rib on Rick one time. Yeah, and I tell you, that dude could eat, man. I mean, we were in Chicago one time, and he's like, he downed a whole pie in front of me, chips, and just kept the food coming, right? And I'm thinking, dude, where are you putting this food, your arms? You know what I mean? He's like laughing, like, I'm hungry, man. Like, okay.
That would explain the arm.
Right?
I just lost my train of thought. You killed it. That sucks. What was I going to say? Oh, man. Oh, the funny thing about that promo with Steiner was I remember specifically, me, I'll just stay here in the NWO for life. And the NWO hadn't been around for like 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If the NWO...
No, I just remember that for some reason he was bringing up the NWO, and for some reason...
Yeah, I think the promo's like, but I'm NWO, on NWO for life.
Scott, I hate to tell you this, but the NWO hasn't been around since January. You're shooting on.
Oh, man.
And then after that, remember, he kept putting an adhesive tape over his mouth? So he wouldn't talk.
I think, wasn't it Kevin? It's on one of the DVDs that Kevin Sullivan was, I have to be the one to ask him what the hell he was thinking.
Yeah, right.
I'm shooting on Ric Flair, but you're not in a program with Ric Flair. Now what the hell am I going to do?
I'm going to Ric Flair in the back. He's like looking up, seeing what else Scott Steiner's doing, because Rick even thought that Scott had lost his mind. You know? Like, what in the world? Good Lord.
I've seen on the indie level, I've seen not to the degree of Scott Steiner, but I've seen moments where I'll tell the story to you off air. It's nothing, what's the word I'm looking for? It's nothing controversial, but it was a funny story where the gentleman who said it to me at the end, he goes, hey, man, I'd work my grandmother if I had to. And I said, okay, good point. So.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that one.
Yeah, it's not a huge deal. It's really funny if you're in my position. I'll explain you the whole story off air. Because I don't know if he would probably want me to. I'll tell you off air. Russo, once again, this brings us to the Hulk Hogan incident. This wasn't really on Nitro, but we saw the aftermath of this obviously unfold weekly on Nitro. The Bash at the Beach incident, where Jeff Jarrett supposedly wanted to go over and Hulk Hogan didn't want to do business. I still have no idea. I've heard different things. I've heard it was a work shoot. I've heard it was a work. I've heard it was a shoot. But that was the last time. That's how Hulk Hogan's... Oh, you really thought that was it. That was how his career was going to end. I mean, thank God Hulk Hogan had another run the WWF later, but we really thought Bash at the Beach, Russo cursing him off, and that was how Hulk Hogan was going to end. So he went home with the title, and this started what I was hoping to be a new era in WCW, but it was Booker T's first title reign. And I don't think, and I'm sure you would agree with me, even being, a friend with him yourself, a more deserving person to have the world title in that position.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, in my opinion, he should have had it way before then. You know, I mean, Booker T, I mean, he's like one of the founding members, you know what I mean? And you couldn't ask for a great guy, a great athlete. I mean, he still looks great. And you know, it was his, you know, it's been his time actually. And, you know, through all the craziness at the time, all the political mumbo jumbo and all that. And I still don't agree to this day, the way that Hogan was treated by Russo at all. You don't treat Hall of Famers like that. You don't treat guys that bring you money to yourself and the company and the fans and the wrestlers, you know, like that at all. I mean, Hulk Hogan is somebody you go up to as a wrestler after shows it. Thank you for the house. Thank you, you know, for the show, because he's our moneymaker. You know what I mean? He's helping us. He's helping elevate us, guys like him, you know. You don't do that. And the Russo was dead wrong in that deal. And I'll defend it to this day. And with Booker T, you know, I was so, you know, through all the craziness, I was so happy he was finally getting the push for a title that he more than deserves. I mean, Booker T is one of the best wrestlers in our business, hands down.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100% that way. I mean, really, I could say that was where the other shoe dropped, but I mean, how many other times did the shoe drop or the vase get knocked over, or did the sinkhole open up at that point? That this was just another, you know, you're falling down the cliff, and this is just another branch you're going to hit on the way down. I mean, there's no climbing back up. But I remember not being particularly happy about that. But listen, the only way out of that was to give Booker T the title at that point. Giving Jeff Jarrett the title at the end of that night, you would have still been having people asking for refunds. You know what I mean?
Yeah, oh yeah. And, you know, my only regret was the fact that the Booker T could have won it on better circumstances, you know what I mean, rather than just a political thing. Because, I mean, he deserves that, and then some, you know. And it was just like we had talked about with Diamond Dallas Page. You know, it was his time, and, you know, and he, as well as a run as he had with the title, I wish he had an even more established reign with it. Because, I mean, it was his time, and he's the top guy. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that when it's your time, you know, it you know, give yourself a chance to run with it, make some money with it, and make us all money. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know, and I think you'll agree with me this, obviously. I mean, the titles continued in WWF after WCW was bought. But the one thing Booker T can say, and nobody else can say, he was the last ever WCW World Heavyweight Champion, period.
Amen. Amen. That's a high honor to have. Very high.
God, yes. I just wish it wasn't in that little hotel outside of wherever the hell it was. I don't even remember anymore.
All right.
It was Texas.
It had, outdoors, right?
Yeah. Oh, gosh, where was it? It was in Texas. I remember that. Literally, the hotel was shaped like a U with an opening in it, and out on the beach was the ring. The only thing that bothers me about that night is it really shouldn't have been an arena. But again, I'm not. I'm sure they didn't, you know, book it that way on purpose.
Oh no, yeah. it's just like the booking at time. It's always an accidental deal, you know.
Yeah. Next week, we're going to talk about that very show, the end of Nitro. But we're also going to talk about the impact that the other TV shows had. Because at one point, Thunder was not even a B show. They were booking. Let's just say this. Bret Hart was signed to WCW by Bischoff on the sole purpose where I need more guys. I need to do another TV show. And we'll just leave it at there. So next week, we're going to talk about Thunder and what happened to Saturday Night towards the end of the company. And then we'll go from there. Hopefully Derek will join us next week. I was talking to him off air. He was not able to join us. No big deal. Shro, what do you got coming later this weekend? And any plugs, sir? Go for it.
Oh, well, tomorrow night I will be in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania at the Franklin County Fairgrounds for Championship Pro Wrestling. Then this Saturday night, I will be wrestling in New Creek, West Virginia at the Summer Carnival there, and I have a $1,000 challenge in new wrestler who can last 10 minutes with me, which should be pretty interesting. And I just actually last night shot a new episode of Sleepy Hollow TV. I was on the shoot on set during the TV series that will be premiering this September, so I'll be looking out for the new Sleepy Hollow season. And also, I just shot a new trailer for Dracula's War the other week, which will be out this October, I believe. And this fall, we'll be also in a new movie called The Hollow Oak, which will be premiering. It's about a curse from back in the day to modern time concerning some witches, and I'll be one of the witch hunters in that film. So, and next week I'll be wrestling Jake the Snake Roberts, defending my Trans-South Wrestling Heavyweight Championship in Gaffney, South Carolina, at the Peach Festival. And on that card also will be the Rock and Roll Express taking on Dr. Tom Pritchard and the Raging Bull, Manny Fernandez. George South, going George South will be there. Yes, we have action-packed card. And yet, by the way, thank you for congratulating me for winning the Carolinas Heavyweight Championship this past Saturday night in Wilmington, North Carolina. It was a big honor. And matter of fact, it was a great night. One of the lady wrestlers, Cassie Taylor, was a birthday, and a surprise appearance by a friend of mine there, Baby Doll, the Perfect Ten, Tully Blanchard. She was there. Her daughter actually wrestles, you know, Samantha Starr. She's the heavyweight champ for UPWA, right? Ladies champ.
Oh, man.
And,
wow. Yeah, I saw that picture. She was there. That was pretty cool.
And I'll be seeing actually Tully Blanchard's daughter again really soon, Tessa Blanchard, and she just started wrestling too. And it's great seeing the new generation come up, you know, now and making their impact in the business, and it's great. And for all information on me, what's happening, TV, film, movies, wrestling, what have you, just check out my website at www.thestro.com.
We interviewed Tully on HIC Talk Radio once. It was a great interview. Never, ever, and I don't mean this insulting, it was a great interview. I'm talking to a legend of the ring, but never, ever have anybody ever pumped gas while doing an interview with us on the show before. It was great.
That's awesome.
also this week, this coming Monday, you and I will be on Rubbed Raw on VOCNation.com together. So we'll be doing a show together. Day. And follow me on Twitter at DanLow83 and just listen to the latest episodes of HIC Talk Radio. We got into a very heated discussion about, we got into a very interesting discussion about Randy Orton and Best for Business, and it went into Goldberg and a little bit of WCW. So there was a little bit of WCW retro talk on HIC this week. So go to HIACTalkRadio.com. Derek, again, will be joining us next week. I'll be back with we'll be back with Derek and the Stro next week for Thunder and Saturday Night Wrestling. That's it, folks. We'll see you next week. Thank you for joining us. Good night.
All systems operating within normal design parameters. Engage cybernetic generation sequence.